Blog Talk Radio.
In the beginning was the beat, and the beat was the rhythm of God, and the rhythm of God is the harmony of humanity, and where there is harmony, there is peace.
Welcome, family. Welcome to all of you in our listening audience. I am Sister Nanana, one of the board members with Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative. And I am here to welcome you and to be your host this evening on our Thursday night radio program, Dare to Win. We dare to win, dare to be bold. This is where we have a sober discussion about harnessing the vast economic resources of the Black community into a global cooperative business and the exact methodology that leads to economic self-determination. So thank you for being with us. Our question tonight is, what is power? How is it manifested? And how can people of Black African descent use it? How can we use power? Stick and stay with us, and we'll be starting that exciting discussion in just a couple of minutes. Talk to you again soon. All right, we are back with you, a board member with Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative. And once again, I welcome all of you in our listening audience, and I invite you to join in the discussion as we explore this exciting topic and other questions in tonight's program. So please stay tuned with us. And we're going to have a very lively discussion this evening on our Dare to Win Thursday night program. We're here every Thursday at 9 p.m. Central Time, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And this evening we have another board member from Us Lifting Us joining us to help help us work our way through this subject on what is power, how is it manifested, and how can Blacks use it, and that's Brother Shabaka. Brother Shabaka, would you like to say a few words of welcome to our listening audience?
Yes, I would, and greetings, Sister Nanana, and good evening to you and the listening audience. I am very happy and pleasing to be able to try to tackle this subject, and look forward to our communication and discussion throughout the evening. Thank you so much.
Wonderful, wonderful. We are pleased to have you and your energy with us this evening. And just as a word to let our listening audience know how to join us in the discussion, you can dial 929-477-2789 and press the number 1 on your dial. 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your keypad, and that will alert us to let us know that you would like to ask a question or make a comment and be part of the discussion. The other thing you can do is go to the ULU website. That's usliftingus.com, usliftingus.com, and click on the ULU radio tab. And when you click on that ULU radio tab, look for the link to click that allows you to join us online. And please do and be a part of this this very lively discussion that we're about to start this evening. So if you're ready, Brother Shabaka, we'll go ahead and just get right into it. Does that sound okay to you?
Yes, it does. So
all right.
Question, what is Tao and how is it managed?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to state the question again. Yeah, our question this evening is, what is power? How is it manifested? And how can blacks use it? The it being power. So would you please get us started with that, Brother Shabaka? What might your response be to that question? What is power? How is it manifested? And how can blacks use power? What are your thoughts?
Well, Sister Nanana, that's quite a mouthful, and you know, there's so much going on in the universe right now, and particularly on Earth and here in the U.S. So a lot of stuff that gets us distracted, and a lot of the stuff that gets us distracted is a consequence of power. Let me try to explain. First, let me try to offer maybe a little bit of the description by one of our great thinkers to provide some context for this evening's discussion, and that's Dr. Amos. Ancestor Dr. Amos N. Wilson, in his book, Blueprint for Black Power, A Moral, Political, and Economic Imperative for the 21st Century, and he was paraphrasing Roland May and a few others, stated that power is the ability to cause or prevent change. Now, in his book, in his initial discussion, in that first chapter, he says that power is the ability to cause or prevent change. Dr. Wilson went on to say that power, within the context of human socialization and interaction, as forces involve the exercise of biological, physical, and I would add to that, psychological means to prevent another person or group from doing what he or she prefers to do, or to get something to happen to that person or group if the initial person or group disagrees with that. In other words, what I'm trying to say is this. If I am a group, and Sister Nanana, you are a group, and I have a little bit more power than you do, and you want to do something, if I don't like it, I have the means to prevent you from doing it and maybe punishing you. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Right. All right, so in that context, from Amos Wilson and others, that's an illustration of power. Now, you ask, how is it manifested? Well, I'd like to take us back a few years to 1984. Brother Neely Fuller wrote a book called The United Independence Compulsatory Code System Concept, A Compensatory Counter-Racist Code. He was dealing with white supremacy at the time. In fact, the late and ancestor Dr. Frances Cress Welsing also used a lot of his works for her own theory. Well, in his work, he essentially said that in order for white supremacy, that's the domination of the people we call white, to dominate, it must control the human activities of the nation or society. And then he goes on to identify several activities by which white folks or Europeans, as they are sometimes called, dominates, and particularly in our society. And he names. The first is economics. All right, now I looked up how economics might be influential. And then, you know, when you see from this, it describes the commercial and activities within a society. All right, and now when we look in terms of the European use of it, we see that their use is global. And in further research, I found that, Oxfam, an international confederation of 20 NGOs, that's non-government organizations, usually recognized by the UN, working with partners in over 90 countries, and they work with partners to end what they consider injustices that cause poverty, and recently found that 20, not 200, not 2,000, not 20,000, but 20 of the richest billionaires in the world own or control over half of the wealth of the poorest half of the world's population. In other words, what I'm saying is that 20 billionaires own and control more than $1.4 trillion worth of wealth that 3.8 billion people, poorest people on the earth, control or have. So that means 20 in comparison to 3.8 billion. 20, you can use your fingers and your hands to count. 3.8 billion, it would take you some time to count that amount. And we're talking about half the population of the 7.6, 7.5 billion people on the face of the earth. The World Health Organization says that 4.2 billion people in the world live in poverty. The essential need for that is to show the significance of wealth as a measurement to control activities within a society, and as we see here, globally, economics, all right, how you do the commercial and use of means of production in order to acquire goods, services, distribution, and all that. Economics basically studies how that is done in a society. In addition to economics, Mr. Neely Fuller goes on to say politics is also another human activity. And we can see now with the upcoming 2020 election, apart from the 2016, that was very dramatic, and I assume that the 2020 election is going to be equally dramatic. Politics, I think education, we can see people activity in that, and I'll say something a little later about education. Entertainment and media, particularly media as it pertains to entertainment, because it is the apparatus that begins to percolate all of the content that the controlling bodies want to feed us in order to sustain its control. So it used that, and of course we can see about some of the things that have happened to African people, some bad, some good, but still they control the media. We do not. Obviously, religion. We can see how that can become controlling element. And a lot of people, particularly in our community, are engaged in religious activities. Labor, law, I would say add to that the law and the criminal justice system, sex and war. So he names nine activities in which people are engaged. And he indicates that the white folks are in control of these, and they use these means to control. So it's a lot going on. Now, Sister Nanana and the family might ask, well, what are the sources? What brings, you know, power to bear? Well, I think Dr. Wilson also went on to say and shed some light on that by saying that in order for a group to exert and have power over other groups, particularly if, you know, it's not homogeneous, it must possess or control some important value material or social resources which may represent the basis for its power and over other groups and individuals. In other words, if I am a farmer and I'm the only and I have the only farm, you know, let's say in my district, and I provide produce for people, then obviously I have a lot of influence, you know, because I'm the only farm, all right? And you need what is necessarily the things that I grow in order to eat so that you can sustain your life. So I have a tremendous amount. That social resource that I have control over also can be used to influence the behavior of other people, if not, you know, other groups in that society. And so consequently, you know, we can see, well, let me add this. This can happen, you know, in a multitude of situations. And let me define, you know, somewhat of the current reality. If you go to Japan, Japan is essentially homogeneous. What I mean by that, the people are basically, you know, Japanese descendants. You might have a few Chinese there, a few Europeans there for the most part. And they don't usually do a lot of intermarriage and intermingling. All right, they maintain and sustain their culture. You might find the same thing that happened in China. In fact, you might find that also going on in a lot of Asian cultures. All right, so essentially, the people are homogeneous. They look alike, same language, boom. All right, but they do different things. Some of the things that they do, and a lot of the things that they do, I should say, is related to how they see themselves in relationship to the process to produce their goods and their services. So they may not necessarily be engaged in agriculture. They may be engaged in other things, which is a direct result of agriculture. For an example, Cheerios, and I don't eat Cheerios, sister, but I'm using this as an example. All right, Cheerios.
Okay.
Well, Cheerios do not grow up from the ground. All right, there is wheat and other elements that is used and put in Cheerios, which is then taken from the ground. It is transported to a place where it is processed. All right, and then it is distributed, and then a lot of propaganda machinery is made and percolated throughout the society, such that when I see Cheerios, I go get a box of Cheerios, all right? It's the relationship. I might be a clerk. All right, well, I'm somewhere in that process, all right, of getting the raw elements that goes into Cheerios to the market, all right? Or I may be a farmer. I may be someone driving the truck. But I am doing those things as a consequence of what the society has organized itself to do in order to get the goods and services that people want. In fact, I sometimes would like to try to encourage them to eat certain goods, all right, and to use certain services so I can profit it myself. And the ability to be able to do that is a manifestation of power. So we see you that.
So what I hear you saying, Brother Shabaka, is that part of what comes to play in terms of the sourcing or the accessing of power is having the ability to control, to have ownership of material resources and to be able to be in control of production and various goods and services. You know, would that be the essence of what you're sharing with us as far as a source of power or an example of a source of power?
Yes, I would say that is very true, and you put it very eloquently in those words. All right, and that enables certain groups who have that influence and control, all right, to be able to dictate its wants, while at the same time, as I said earlier, prevent others who may be dissatisfied with those dictates, but may be powerless to move because of the structural process which allows such manifestation of power to exist.
I see.
Let me go back
for just a second, Brother Shabaka, if you don't mind, back to something that you mentioned very early on when we first started the discussion, and you were giving us the definition of power and shared with us, I think it was 8 or 9 areas where power is most prevalent, and the very first one that you mentioned was economics. And so obviously that is you know, a major area in which power shows up, and the evidence of either having or not having power. So this example that you gave with the 20 billionaires who own or control more than $1.4 trillion worth of wealth, what type of an economic system is that? If you were to identify it or categorize it, what kind of an economic system is that that creates an opportunity or allows for that to happen?
Well, my study of history says right now this economic system that we're currently in, that's capitalism, and some folks say it's international extension is what they call imperialism, where people basically right now of European ancestry are coming from that, where, and that includes Europe, Western Europe, and parts of Eastern Europe also, the United States, certain parts of Central South America, Australia, New Zealand, you know, those places where we see the imprint of European expansionism, we're talking about billionaires from those areas. Now, we might have, no, we talk about billionaires from those areas. We do have Africans who are billionaires, but not necessarily the top 20. You know, we do have Africans who are billionaires, but not necessarily the top 20. But now they control a tremendous amount of wealth and resources, and they use this control because, as you said, economics, which looks at the amount of goods and services that are distributed, they control every aspect of that, both horizontal and vertical. And what I mean by vertical, the foundation, you know, of this, like the farming, and then eventually the farming and the production and the distribution that gets to me in the form of materials, all right, they control every aspect of that. And they use that control, and like I said, in order to get what they want and to suppress others from getting what they want. You can see a lot of information and discussion has been done on the wealth gap and even the wage gap to a different, well, though similar, the wealth gap. And that's as a consequence of the gap increasing, all right, because of the ability of these people who are in these capitalistic countries, whom we call capitalists, all right, are able to, because of their control, exploit more and more, suppress wages, you know, maximize profit, evidently benefits, it's used to benefit them.
Okay.
I hope that addressed a little bit. If you have another one, you want to follow up on it?
Yes, that does, that explanation does help. But let me ask you another question related to power, Brother Shabaka. It seems pretty clear to me that those who are in power positions, once they achieve a power position, that everything humanly possible is done by that individual or those groups to maintain the power within their circle or their sphere of influence. So what is your thought in terms of why it is that those who have power never share it? What's the logic around that? What is it that we need to understand around the not sharing of power?
Yeah, very good question, Sister Nanana. Thank you for raising that. As I said a little bit earlier, you know, you have, when I was trying to describe Japan and some of the Asian countries being homogeneous, and that if they're broken up, if they have groupings, those groupings might be associated with what people are doing, and some people have even clarified those as classes. These different classes may have a cooperation or they may be dominated. Now, when you get to a society like the U.S., all right, where we have a number of folks from various countries coming in, then you have a plurality of groupings. Still, those groupings tend to try to negotiate, all right, a struggle to get their piece, call it their piece of the pie. And their piece of the pie means at least some aspect of control certain segments of the production process to profit. Now, if I'm a capitalist and I'm outright controlling, then you rebel, all right? Evidently, to yield to the rebellion, I'll try to suppress it as much as I can. To yield to it means I must share power. Now, if I share power with you, all right, I have a slight domination over your group, Sister Nanana, and I have my group, and we're dominating. We're beating you. And then, but you're making some moves, and then the question of negotiation and sharing, you want a little bit more piece of the pie. I don't want that piece of the pie, you know, to share that, because I wouldn't be able to get as much as I am getting right now. That means my sharing decreases my ability to get my wants and my desires. If I have to share with you, I don't get it. All right? I have to give some of it to you. All right? So in the current sense, that self-interest, all right, prevents me from not wanting to share and to impede any sharing. And if I have to share, it's because I can see or forecast that in sharing down the road, I might be losing more than I feel that I am accustomed to losing, and that would impede my ability to recover. In other words, if I'm a billionaire, all right, got several billion dollars, all right, a lot of wealth, net worth is high, and I have to concede and give you half of that, well, I would only concede and give you half of that if I can still do just about as much as I can with the billion that I have. If I can't do that, we're going to be fighting tooth and nail because I don't want to share. You're going to prevent me from my lifestyle. Everything is going to be disrupted. And, of course, my ability to economically get what I want. So I'm going to not necessarily be too anxious to share because my self-interest would not necessarily be served. And it's only at the point, I know John Henry Clark says, when you got the knife up to his throat, then he wants to negotiate. All right, and so if the knife is not there at my throat and I still have the apparatus to suppress you, to exploit you, all right, and kill you if necessary, not in large numbers because I still need to exploit your labor, then I'll do that in order to sustain my self-interest. I hope that is a little descriptive of what I see as people not yielding to sharing because it impedes their ability in this power relationship to get what I want. I would have to sacrifice. And if I'm in a, particularly if I'm in a society where I don't feel that I need to sacrifice, if not sacrifice, that I am a privilege, then I'm not going to be comfortable with sharing.
Well, that certainly does help to put it out there very plainly. And it sounds like on the surface that it would be a very simple concept to understand that those who have power do everything they can to hold on to it and don't share it because the sharing then diminishes the degree or the level of power that they have. And that sounds like a simple concept. However, I judge that it's one of the basic concepts around power that we as people of Black African descent need to really look at very seriously and to understand that this is not something that you do share once you have it. And that kind of leads us into another whole segment of conversation that we're going to address after we have a short music break, because we're going to talk about power, and Brother Shabaka, have you to make some comments around how power might be used to benefit not only us as people of Black African descent, but other people as well. So stay with us, and we'll be back shortly to have that discussion. welcome back, and thank you for being with us. Once again, you are tuned into Dare to Win. This is the Thursday night radio program for Us Lifting Us, Economic Development Cooperative. We are here every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. This is the place where we have those sober, hard-hitting discussions about harnessing the vast economic resources of the Black community into a global cooperative business and the exact methodology that leads to economic self-determination. Once again, I am Sister Nanana, one of the board members of Us Lifting Us, and I have Brother Shabaka, another board member, who's here with us helping to lead us through a dialogue this evening on the subject of power. What is it? How it can be used? And just what are some of the particular aspects of power that we need to understand? If you care to join us and be a part of the discussion, to make a comment or ask a question, please dial in to 929-477-2789 and press the number 1 on your keypad. That's 929-477-2789. All right, still back to added Brother Shabaka, and moving right along with this discussion, I do have a question to pose for you, and that is, how can power be used to benefit everyone? You've let us know quite a bit about power and benefit that it has for a particular segment of the population or a particular group, those who have possession of power. So could you comment, please, on how power might be used to benefit all?
Yes, I'll try, Sister Nanana. The concept is a little foreign to me, and I'll tell you why. Not that it cannot happen, but let me tell you why it's a little foreign. One, when we look at power, we see power manifested through groups. All of us came from somewhere, and we organize in a certain way. Either, you know, we look at our family structure. That's an organization inside that. Families coming in contact with families, producing clan, and then across the larger, the tribes or nations, what have you, whatever you want to call them. And so each one of those groupings, you know, result in a distribution and a sharing or competing for power. And so the only way in which I can see if we talk about power for all, and that is if a righteous cause, a just cause is happening, and that is, let's say, African people regaining control over their socioeconomic life, all right, and bringing ourselves much closer and reverencing the earth, which provide all for us. In so doing, that benefit that benefits us trickles down or trickles out and begin to benefit other people. In other words, my group activity to have power over myself, not necessarily to dominate others, releases control that others might have over others, and they in turn benefit from the action that I take in benefiting myself. And then, you know, that's very possible, and I give you one little contemporary example of that. I think some of us, you know about the political systems, particularly in Europe and the United States. You know, in Europe they have a parliamentary system, and usually they have various parties that represent various groupings inside those European states. All right. Now, no one group can get a majority of the vote in order to have a majority inside of a parliament. So what they do is form and build alliances. These alliances, all right, tends to allow one grouping to have greater than 50% of the vote, therefore, inside of parliament, and therefore they are destined to rule, okay? But that's as a consequence that I didn't have enough, but now I have enough. Of course, you know, in the American system with the parliamentary procedure, you only have two-party system. We don't have multitudes of parties. We have two-party system. But even in those parties, we have conservatives. They talk about conservatives. They talk about liberals. They talk about left of center, right of center, left of center. Right of center, you know, all that kind of nonsense. These are just particular groupings of folks that are trying to get their will through because they do represent, or they're supposed to represent, a constituency who represent and elect them every 2 or 6 years. In Parliament, of course, when it comes to the president, every 4 years in this country. So you have that kind of thing. So in our just to liberate ourselves from the shackles of economic control and domination by one group of people, it in turn releases and allow others to benefit from that, then I can see where power was used to benefit all or most, when really the manifestation of that power was to relinquish, to get rid of the domination that others had or had over me. So in that context, I yield and say it could possibly happen. And I think that if anybody, we're at the bottom, so-called bottom of the ladder, that when Africans begin to take and regain our just position, that it will benefit. It's possible that it could benefit all peoples who are non-Africans. It could. Did that help, Sister Nanana?
It helps somewhat. It seems to me that's a difficult area for us to operate in terms of our future planning and our efforts and our whatever energies we put into garnering economic, political, educational, social power. It would appear to me that we would have enough to do to make sure that we maintain power and build coalitions and liaisons amongst ourselves, and to sufficiently do that in order to bolster and move forward our efforts to do that first before we would really consider using our power as a benefit specifically targeting others outside of our community. However, I also see that as we prosper and grow and move forward and become more powerful, I think that there is only a natural residual that will occur that all others will benefit from the progress that we make. I just judge that that's going to be a natural aftermath of our rising into power, that there will be benefits for people who are not of Black African descent, and that we don't necessarily have to make a significant effort to do that, that it's just going to happen as a natural part of the process. So,
yes,
you know,
that
would be my thought in that area. So, but let me move on and ask another question or kind of guide this in a little bit different direction, but certainly still talking about power as well. Now, what are
just
some
before,
of the
before
things?
You, before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just before,
go ahead.
Yeah, before you say that, let me highlight, because I think what you made was a very important comment, and I did speak about the European parliamentary system and how collaboration. The collaboration that I'm talking about that has to happen has to first, and I think you said it, but I want to make it clear, has to first happen within a African context. We have to build coalition with ourselves first, and you know, instead of so-called coalition with the I don't know, Well, you know, it's hard for me to look at coalition for the Europeans. I mean, I really got to do some real serious thinking on that. But building coalitions outside of our group, we have to first build this because we are the only people who have been subjugated, enslaved, all right, and then starting the colonization period, the extraction. We're still making countries in Europe extremely wealthy now while our people on the continent are suffering. So we have to build that coalition. We have to build those economic and cultural bonds. I think you were implying that, all right, first. And then the result, of benefits to us affect other people because we all on the globe together. All right, then I can see how that would be beneficial. But I want to make that the coalition must first happen with us. If you build coalitions outside of the family first that are not us, you know, what you do is separate us. You drain us. The energy that would necessarily be put into our movement is then directed to other people's movement, and then it makes it that much difficult for us to be successful with mm-hmm. our movement. But you were getting ready to ask another question, I believe.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I was just going to ask, what is your thought on how people of Black African descent can actually go about acquiring power? Specifically for our own use and benefit. I think you've approached that subject a little bit, but could you be more specific?
Yeah, when I listed the human activities that the Neely Fuller listed, the first one on there was economic, and it's not by accident that he listed economics as first, all right, because that lays the foundation. I would say it is the most important because of the human and material needs that we need in order to sustain this frame that we call a body. I would say equally as important is the cultural need, or some people call it the spiritual need, because through our culture, our spiritual needs, our psychological needs are met, our admiration to our ancestors, our elders, to God, all right, those things are met, and those things shape us spiritually. All right, but I don't want to put the economics is that if you don't go along with this economics, you could, you know, the heck with the spiritual. The cultural needs are equally important, but in the environment that we're in now, we're dominated by economic forces and trends and activities. All right, although those economic activities are interwoven in all of those nine areas, that I mentioned that Healy Fuller mentioned up there. And so for people of African descent, one, the development of race consciousness. And that shouldn't be too hard. We might run away from it, but it shouldn't be too hard. And then once we have this development of race consciousness, we have to look economically, what do we need to do? We do have resources. They may be scarce in comparison to others, but we do have resources. We're 45 million strong here. We're a billion folks on the African continent. We got about 100 million, you know, in Brazil. So we do have people resources. We do have resources. We do have land, all right? And we do have skills. So we're not lacking anything. It's just our perception of pooling these resources together, all right? Pulling these resources together. All right, and now once we, and that includes the money. I don't want to make it shy that we're not talking about money. Yeah, we want the human resources there. We want the skills, but we live in a capitalistic world economy, not just country. We live in a capitalistic world economy, and there's need for finances that is needed to purchase. And we do have finances. I mean, we do have money and resources, that kind of resource. If you don't think so, all right, just every Sunday morning, you know, just visit the church, and we're making those, and we know a lot of money goes into the tithes, and sometimes we do have a few ministers that are not unscrupulous, but some adjusting. They do try to do something with that money that is harnessing that. So we have the capabilities because we have already shown it. And historically, even in this society, we've shown we've been able to build economies. Pull these resources. Now, once the resources are pulled and with our intellect, identify how we can build powerful business infrastructure and own and control businesses operated and controlled by us, Africans, people of Black African descent. Once we identify what those businesses are identified and they are successful, they are producing profits, then the next thing to do is identify an effective way to return these back to the community or the society or the nation. So we're pulling our resources, all right? I didn't say we had to go to the polls and vote for anybody. I said pull our resources. Take these resources, identify the businesses that will produce goods and services for our people. We've been among our people. We know what they like, all right? Hire our people, put them in the job, train them, give them skills, show them how to give good customer service, that we are, you know, people, we're human, we do have a culture. Not all of us are the N-word. We don't need that. I want you to look at me as a person the same way you probably would look at your grandmother and reverence her, even though I might come from on the other side of the country. Do that. Identify how to return these resources back to the community and or the nation, and then we build from that. We lay the foundation. We build our economic structure. We build our judicial system if we need to, of fair courts and laws. All right. And then we'll build our media so we can transmit how successful we've all have been. Because when you're talking about hundreds of millions of people, billions of people, you have to have an apparatus that is able to communicate and percolate that information outside, which makes people very responsive and proud of themselves. So we need to do that.
I'm sorry, didn't mean to interrupt, but it sounds the structure of the plan that you're laying out, it sounds to me like this is the plan that ULU has with family economics.
It's exactly that. When we look at what we take, I think ULU Foundation and members saw that this is what we are involved in, this is what we face, and they build it based on our history, our culture, and the economics that they see, which would pull us together. So, sister, you are so right with that. And our plan calls for pooling our resources together. Bring members in. Our members pull our resources together. Our members identify the businesses and services that can produce a profit. All right. Serve our community. All right. Get our community involved and bring them in as membership. And then have a way of distributing the resources that benefit the whole community. All right, as well as our members. So that's the ULU plan. I didn't mean to stop you, sister, or jump in there.
That's okay. I was just thinking. So if one of our listeners or someone wanted to learn more about the ULU plan or to see more specifics around it, how might they be able to do that?
Very easily. They can go to the website. Well, we're on, as you said at the beginning of the program, every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern time, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And we bring stimulating conversations, all right, to the community, all right? We want to inform. This is a medium, all right, by which we can communicate and transmit ideas. We invite our listening audience to converse with us. Some of them do, some of them don't. If they cannot, we can go to the website. Our website is usliftingus.com. That's usliftingus, usliftingus.com. You know, that's all one word. And we have a slew of information on that website. All right, a slew of information on that website. Go through that website. All right, look at the videos that we have. You can send us an email, communicate the email to us, and we will answer it if you have questions on any material that you see on the website. And you can do that by just sending an email to info@usliftingus.com. That's info@usliftingus.com. All right, but we invite you to go through that. Raise your question. And also we have a phone number. Sister Lenana, do you have that phone number offhand?
Yes, the main number for ULU is 404-2780. Once again, 404-592-2780. That's our main number, and for anyone who dials that number, you will be answered by a voice recorded message, and your call will be returned very shortly. Most calls are returned within 24 hours by an ULU board member to respond to you and to answer your questions and get you the information that you need. Also keep in mind, for those who are interested in membership in Us Lifting Us, that can also be done on the website. You can click on the tab that says Join, and you will receive instructions there on how to become an ULU member. And the membership cost is $50 annually, $50 per year. So we look forward to continually increasing our membership and to having more and more people from the community who step up and take an active role in assisting to build this new economic future for our people. And it's very exciting, for sure, very exciting. Just one more question, Brother Shabak, I'd like to ask. Perhaps you can quickly comment on this as we start to wind down in the last few minutes that we have here. There are, I judge, a large or a fairly good portion or segment of our community, people of Black African descent, who put a lot of energy and effort and concern around voting. Could you just quickly give us your thought, your comment, your idea on whether or not voting is a way to assist us in acquiring power? How do you see that?
If we can vote and we get everything that we ask for, everything as a community that we ask for, we vote. And what I mean, what we get, everything that we ask for should be very tangible and measurable, and that benefits us as Black people. All right? So if candidates come to our neighborhoods, all right, and want to solicit our votes, then, you know, voting is a quid pro quo thing. All right, I'll give you my vote, but this is what I want in return. And then you get and publicly have them state what they're going to do for your community, sign it in blood, their blood, if necessary, but you want them to commit. And then more importantly, that if they renege on any of the promises that they have, there should be a process to remove them from office. All right, you want to be able to do that. Aggregate our resources and vote as a block. In other words, we're coming together. We want to bring our resources to do economic things, but if we're going to enter the voting arena, we need to vote as a block. All right. And we don't vote symbolism. We vote concrete, tangible benefits. If we see that we cannot get those, then we don't vote, because if we can't get those and exercising, that makes somebody else who belongs to another group or community or neighborhood benefits whom he's representing. He, in other words, he gets his group to represent. He doesn't have to yield anything to us at all. So therefore, we don't hurt by not voting, but we do hurt if we vote and we get no benefits from that voting. So if we don't see a benefit coming from that voting, we don't vote. And that's one of the things that Dr. Claude Anderson mentioned, that, you know, we got to start giving away our votes. We don't have to vote candidates. but we vote interest. You know, I don't care whether you're green, black, blue, gray, pink, you know, you have to deliver on your promise to us or we'll remove you from that. If we can't see ourselves being in power to be able to do that, then don't waste your vote. We need to put that energy towards something else. That's how I see it, Sister Nanana, if mm-hmm. you wanted to follow up.
Well, thank you for your comments on that, and I definitely agree that voting in our community at some point needs to be seriously organized in such a way that we can vote as a unit and that we can wield power by doing that. And also something that we have not done that I judge we should try in the future, and that is as a group or as a segment of the population to very clearly withhold our vote. And by doing that, candidates will then seek us out and make offers to us because they will then want to garner or pull our vote in. So sometimes the most powerful thing that you can do in this type of a what's called a democratic society is that the withholding of the vote and the obvious withholding of the vote sends the signal to the candidate, and they will then pretty much court us. We won't have to seek them out. So, well, this has been definitely a discussion that warrants, I judge, more time and attention in the future. We need to increase our understanding around what power is, how power manifests itself, and what are the opportunities for us to garner and to move forward with power. And one of the most, eye-opening, I think, or powerful things that you have shared with us this evening is the fact that power is illustrated through the economy, and that your economy is a reflection of and is a statement of the power within your community. If you have economic power, then that's like 90% of the battle. So what that tells me is that Ulu is definitely on the right track, that we are doing the things that we need to do, and that we will definitely be successful as we continue to move forward. And as we say, we dare to win. So I want to thank the listening audience for having been with us this evening and invite everyone to come back again next Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Thank you, Brother Shabaka, for being with us and for sharing your thoughts and your wisdom with us as well. And so we'll be back once again next Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern, where we dare to win and have those sober discussions about harnessing the vast economic resources of the Black community into a global cooperative.